Members, please try to phrase and frame questions, comments in terms of planning aspects. And I know that there are obviously another number of other considerations, but our decision can only be based on the planning merits of the application in front of us. Councillor Bryant.
I wonder how we get information on the amount of workers that are coming. You said 344, is that right?
Yes, Chair. The report outlines in total 344 jobs, 230 on site, and an extra 114 other jobs. The direct jobs, the on-site jobs, would include site engineers, surveyors, machine operatives, mechanics, electrical engineers, welders, general labourers, explosive engineers, office and administrative staff, managers and security staff. And the indirect jobs, which will include haulage workers, supplies and services, landscape contractors and other professionals overseeing the restoration of the site.
And did you say something about Midlothian would have the majority of those workers? And if so, how are we going to prove that?
Yeah, there's no guarantee when jobs are advertised where applicants come from. It's an open market, people can apply. But as in other industries, there's a pragmatic and common sense approach that employees wish to live close to their place of work. So it's anticipated that the vast majority of those jobs will be for people that live and hopefully spend their money in Midlothian. But I've got no cast iron guarantee that they'll all live in Midlothian. One of the spin-off benefits might be worth mentioning, Chair, is that with these sort of scale of projects, when you employ people like mechanics and electrical engineers, it does offer apprenticeship opportunities as well to local people. And obviously those sort of skills can be transferred, not just within the coal industry, but obviously at the end of the sites, they can move into other industrial aspects. So as well as the jobs, there is the apprenticeship opportunities as well.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to make a couple of observations and then I'll come in later on. But there's a number of people who have worked in open cast and some of them were former deep miners in Midlothian. Now, their jobs went when Shundon went and the jobs went with them. So there's still a lot of experience within Midlothian to work in an open cast site. And I spoke to two or three lads at the weekend who are aware of this captain. At the present moment, they're working on the Borders Railway, and they were quite keen for this development to take off because they see it as a 10-year job, as something you didn't get nowadays.
Thank you, Convener. We just heard reference to apprenticeships, but there is no clear understanding from the papers as to exactly how many apprenticeships are being discussed and in what areas of work, on the basis of how sustainable would such apprenticeships be? Would they lead to work that is actually a sustainable future for young people or any others entering into such apprenticeships? And given that we're all well aware that there's no such thing as a job for life anymore, it also seems equally important that where apprenticeships are being undertaken, that there is some sense of near future-proofing for that apprenticeship. Could we have some more detail around the kind of numbers being envisaged and on what disciplines they might be in? Because it seems to me quite an important aspect, given this Council's commitment to positive destinations.
Chair, in terms of the actual type of work, as referred earlier, in terms of mechanics and machine operatives, electrical engineers, those are skills which are needed on the site and can be transferred externally. In terms of the numbers, I haven't got an exact number for you. The conversations with the applicant about the apprenticeship are ongoing, but what's important here, I think, to note is that the industry before this application has a track record of apprenticeships and training employees. So this is just a continuation of that approach. This isn't it's reasonable to have faith in the applicant's desire to continue that field of creating apprenticeships and jobs in the local areas, because that's just a continuation of what's happened in the past. but I don't have any exact numbers to them.
Bob. Thanks, Chair. My question relates to the minor road, which on page 63, 8.75 of the report. Does this road have to be closed throughout the entire 10 years of the operation, or I understand it has only been developed in stages and restored in stages, and therefore does this road have to be closed for the whole period?
It will be closed for the majority of the period, Chair. Again, it's one of the things that it will have to be closed at the early part of operations. Some access arrangements will have to be put in place, but the way the site operates in terms of the phasing of it, it sort of rotates almost like in a clock motion. So this road, because it's right in the middle, you'll find that it will be sort of key component which will be active throughout the life cycle of the site, so it will be pretty well closed for the whole duration of the operations, Chair.
And just referring to the last sentence in that paragraph, it is likely the applicant will seek for this requirement to be reviewed at a later date. What exactly is meant by that?
In terms of the restoration in general, obviously when you get a site of this size, you need to work out how the site is going to be restored. Now, there's the existing permission or position of the council is that the road will be reinstated. But if you look at the local road network, the actual road itself is just connecting two other points, which ask the question whether the money to restore the road would be better invested in other restoration projects. So it may be a case that the applicants at a later day may wish to ask the council to reconsider that position. But as we sit here today to assess the application, the council's position is that there will be a reinstatement of the road. The applicant's position is also that is the position.
But you mean that any review will come back to this council? Any review of that decision?
Thanks, Convener. Peter, can I ask a couple of points? And I think the thing that really jumps out at me, and it's been a concern since I heard about it, and it's easy to get lost in here, is really regarding Mr. and Mrs. Wiley and one part, and it's the house that they reside in at Ancrea Law. In page 47 of the report, 7.23, where it refers to the Scottish Planning Policy 2010, now it says in that the SPP advises that surface coal extraction is unlikely to be environmentally acceptable if, and one of the points in it is, it would have unacceptable impacts on individual dwelling houses. And then if you go on to later in the report, page 85, 8.221, it refers to the loss of the farm property is regrettable, although it is a matter which is for the landowner to resolve. And goes on, whilst it is an emotive issue, it is not an unusual one, as many forms of site redevelopment often require the relocation of both businesses and homes. It seems a wee bit contradictory there. Is this something that we should be bearing in mind when we have to make the decision? And also the other thing is that, you know, I'm led to believe, and the representative from Hargreaves at the hearing last week did state that they were willing to enter dialogue with Mr. and Mrs. Wiley. And I just wonder if that was anything we knew or any updates on that. But thanks.
Chair, in terms of the Ancrea Law farm and the associated buildings, the proposal does include the demolition of that farmhouse and those buildings. The current occupant of the farm is a tenant farmer and is obviously subject to his tenancy arrangements with the landowner, who's obviously liaison with the applicant, is comfortable to see that house being lost. So as you heard during the predetermination hearing, the occupiers of the farmhouse spoke, and following that meeting, I know the applicants have met with the occupiers of Ancrea Law, and they're in discussion about resolving that issue positively insofar as offering alternative accommodation and employment. So there is a solution there to resolve that issue. In terms of assessing the planning application in terms of impact on residential amenity, obviously if the council accepts as part of the application the demolition of those structures, obviously the people there move out, so therefore the impact of the operations on site is assessed against those residential properties that are still in situ, still occupied. Now there's no other properties on the site that are affected, so in this case the landowner is bringing the tenancy to end with the occupier. The applicant has stepped in and offered alternative employment and accommodation.
Thanks, Peter. Can I move on to the just another issue? Really, it's just jumped out. Is in, it really goes to Rosewell, which we, you know, I know is my area, but the policy roads manager actually recommended there that because vehicles from the site would be allowed access into Rosewell, he suggested two pedestrian crossings be installed at the local schools. But then in the report later on, I think we move on to page 71, 8.133 actually states that it was thought it wouldn't be appropriate to ask the developer to contribute towards that. And I just wondered why that would be, and how do we stop, what type of vehicles is it are going to be allowed to drive into the village? And thanks.
Yeah, Chair. I mean, in terms of the actual, it might be worth just bearing in mind the process of the plan application is when the application comes in with all the details, different bodies internally and externally are consulted based on that information. And during the life cycle of the plan application, there are negotiations, so the situation effectively evolves and changes. The consultation is looking for contributions towards crossing on the basis that there may be some vehicles entering using Rosewell, but later on in the report we seek to propose a condition which ties down the haulage route so the vehicles do not go through Rosewell, therefore you do not ask for a contribution towards a crossing. So there's looking to secure the haulage route coming up the A6094, Rosewell bypass, Byrig bypass, A7, and then onto the A720. So they were not, the haulage vehicles will not go through Rosewell.
Does that include any of the vehicles that they have, or is there anything we can stop there, or will it increase the traffic if they start using the facilities in Rosewell? Is there anything that can be done there?
I mean, in terms of the traffic controls, we are looking at HGV vehicles rather than individual people maybe buying a paper on the way to work, which we're not in a position to control that. But it's just getting those HGV vehicles, which are of most concern, I would have thought, rather than individual cars to and from work.
So Councillor Emery first, and then...
Right. Thanks, Chairman. It was actually just to pick up, and that's why I had indicated I wanted to come in on particular the haulage route, because while we can actually say that there is a preferred haulage route, but the best one in the world, unless you're standing in the street, and I don't think you'll be doing that, you ain't going to stop somebody that nips in for a sandwich or a piece of paper on their way to work. And, and therefore I was quite surprised that you can't actually ask for some speed restrictions in there, which will perhaps put people off from going in through the village. The second point, though, that doesn't seem to be picked up was the comment made that there's going to be an increase in the number of houses within Rosewell. Now, the only way in and out of there, well, there's two ways, but if you're coming east, you have to come out of that junction at the end of Rosewell. Now, at the moment, because the road bypasses there, there are certain difficulties, but not to the stage where there's needing work required. Now, if there's going to be the number of vehicle journeys by lorry passing around the bypass, there's going to be the increase in the number of residents within Rosewell. Should we not be looking to put a condition on right here and now, given it's a 10 to 12 year programme, in actual fact there has to be mitigation for that road junction? Because the last thing we want to do, if we do happen to agree with this application today, is build up trouble for the future. And I just think that at both ends, the Fair Meadows end, which is the other end there as well, because that's the roundabout where the vehicles will be coming around when they're coming on that particular bypass. I do think there should be works done there as well, and also that then takes me on to the signage. You know, can we have a reassurance from the planners that we will get the adequate signage in there that will actually ensure that the vehicles do use the road, the route that's actually been determined for them? Because I do worry that if we have an increase in population in those, well, we're going to end up with a headache, you and I, Chairman, and Councillor Coventry, when the community is asking for mitigation to be done there. And I would rather it was done sooner rather than later, if the application goes ahead.
Chair, there's two things there. I suppose the main point in terms of the volume of traffic going on to the junction, by all means, we can happily look at that. I was quite careful in terms of the phraseology about the conditions being need to be formalised. So there is room to manoeuvre there, and we can quite happily look at that with our transportation colleagues. The second point I would make is just in terms of knowledge of the haul companies, and that hauliers transporting coal in the sort of tonnage of lorries that would be used have on board trackers now, so that you can actually track their routes. So the actual enforcement of routes can be more easily measured rather than someone standing and watching where they're going. So there is a process in place that we can monitor that, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also like to ask a question relating to the transport along the haulage route, particularly on the A7 roundabout at Mayshade, also known as the Tesco roundabout. I've seen reference to improvements on the A7, but nothing to that specific roundabout at all, unless I've missed something. Now, that's already a notorious bottleneck. As a cyclist and a walker in that area, I find it very difficult to negotiate. And I'd like to know what proposals are in place to improve the roundabout itself.
The current position is that the road infrastructure is considered to be acceptable to accommodate the volume of traffic at that point. So that's the starting position with this. I do, however, know that in discussions with the applicants since the report, we have raised the issue of possible contributions towards a bigger strategy to improve that, which we're in discussion with. But I think the starting point for me is that the existing road infrastructure is assessed to be acceptable for the traffic generated from this application. So I think we've got to be careful about whether, you know, an issue on the A7 is a consequence of this scheme and is a sort of legitimate thing to ask for contributions for. But it's happy to consider or take that away, Chair.
Thanks very much for that, Peter. Just a supplementary question to that. Does this take account of the increase in traffic flows that we anticipate from the opening of the Esbank railway station, and also associated with that, the increased number of buses going into the Tesco terminus? Because buses are a significant factor at that roundabout, because they approach it twice if they go into Tesco's.
In terms of going back to this application, it's looking at the impact, the traffic generated from this application onto the road infrastructure. It's not necessarily feeding in extra developments joining the network at some part of the haulage route. So if we're talking about the A7, whether there's a sort of consequential approach there, then that's sort of a broader brush, sort of local plan issue, rather than just an individual site issue. So I'm not 100% sure I can give you the comfort you need that it's been assessed in that terms. We've just looked at it on the basis of this planning application.
Can I ask about restoration now, Peter? You'll be aware that bonds are now a discredited means of doing restoration. Are we considering other ways of doing it?
Yeah, Chair. I mean, the previous bond system was almost like an insurance policy, where a company would have insurance against restoration. But of course, if you insure a site for restoration at one value, but then the cost goes up, you're effectively not covered. So the Scottish coal industry is looking at that at a sort of government level, but there are other options to ensure that the restoration is covered. One of the mechanisms being considered is what's called an escrow account, where the applicant effectively pays certain amount of money per tonnage into the pot as it extracts the coal. So there's an accumulation of funds that will cover the restoration. One of the reasons behind the recommendation in terms of the point one was securing details of the restoration was to bottom out the cost to make sure that when we negotiate the bonds or equivalent financial mechanism, you can guarantee the restoration. So take on board the anxiety about sites across Scotland and obviously Shewington. There's a sort of response to that is to tighten up on the restoration process and the financials surrounding the restoration.
That didn't answer the question, Peter. I mean, which are you going to use? How are you going to ensure that this will be restored?
They haven't bottomed out which exact processes to be used. There's a number of options being considered, but like I say, the Scottish Government's also looking at it to make sure that there's an approach across Scotland, because obviously, from their point of view, there's other sites which need to make sure that restoration is secured. From our point of view and the Council's point of view, the key here is to make sure that there is the appropriate funding, whichever mechanism is used, to make sure the restoration is secured.
Councillor Devine, do you want to, I know you indicated that you did earlier wanted to circulate your contribution to members while you make it.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Very kind of you.
Sorry, Peter, if you give me 1 second, yeah. I'll just...
I have quite a long story to tell, and I asked our secretary to distribute it to members and also to people that are attending, if there are enough copies available. It's quite a technical paper, so that's why I felt it would be useful if I could distribute it and then speak to it. Forgive me for doing it in such a ham-fisted way. Could I state, first of all, that I am a great fan of coal. Coal will ultimately make sure that our lights will not go out in the future, and I sincerely believe in coal. I am, however, also very much aware, if there are spare copies, could we give them to some of the people that are in attendance? I am also very much aware that as a council, we have a legal duty under Section 44 of the Climate Change Act to contribute to emission reduction targets. The coal in Cold Hall is of a low calorific value, 21 net gigajoule, and more than 1.56% sulfur. And that is against 25.12 net gigajoules and 0.3% sulfur that is burned in Longannet. Now, the company has left us in the dark where they are taking this coal and what they are doing with it. Blending this down to acceptable levels is likely to be most impractical. What are they planning to do? We deserve to know. On the issue of sulfur, I have consulted an expert, and she says the following. This is a significant issue with respect to acidification of groundwater. The area has watercourses and peat bogs and marshland. These are all different ecosystems. Mining high sulfur seams will mean a new and long-term release of remaining sulfur from exposed minerals and surfaces. This needs to be dealt with aggressively in the short term with acid mine treatment systems such as liming. But this is also a long-term issue which either needs to be sealed off so that no more sulfur leaches, and she thinks that's unlikely, or there has to be a long-term passive acid treatment system to be built in. And this will all vary with the local ecology. There is the plan for a working group to be established to monitor the rehabilitation of the site, but the time frame of 5 years will require that a passive acidification treatment should be allowed to reach equilibrium to demonstrate long-term efficiency. I'm sure this is being addressed, but would personally want reassurance of the understanding that this is a long-term commitment to keep the acidification of the region under control. We have to think very carefully about the people who put us here and who voted for us. To have not 11 lorries, as they initially let us believe, but 22 lorries every hour going through Midlothian, this is going to cause havoc. What safeguards are we having that these lorries are properly closed and fully washed off, not just the wheels washed off, the whole lorry to be washed off, do we have? I've done some figures. 891,000 lorry movements over the next 10 years, and it fills me with horror, because after 3 years, these lorries are done and they have to be replaced. Just count up how many new lorries. What an environmental disaster. Then we have to work out the lorries that have to bring in all the sulfur in order to deal with the high sulfur contents. For example, the environmental impact assessment requires an operator to consider alternatives and to propose effective mitigation if this proposal are judged to have significant impact. Now, do we have, for example, any consideration of the use of a long-distance conveyor to take this coal out? Maybe the conveyor should go to Hopefield and the coal can be taken out there. We need further expert advice, as this is a very complicated project. What will our environmental footprint look like if we allow this to happen? I have gone through Ian Johnson's excellent report, but I have some observations. The SES plan 2030 is not site-specific. The national planning policy was written before Scottish Coal went bust. Coal toll is only identified in the main issue report. In other words, it is an issue, not a proposal. It must first be assessed for its environmental suitability, and I feel this has not been adequately undertaken, in spite of the assurances by Peter. There is no basis for acceptance in principle, safe proximity to a previous open cast site. Even then, there is only a small part of the old site which corresponds with the new. What is the strong evidence of employment prospect? Jobs depends entirely on a market. Markets are beyond anyone's control, and certainly the control of those in this room. The impacts are huge. Some can be conditions, but they can only be controlled if there is a workforce within the planning department to do that. Midlothian simply does not have that. Restoration has to be bonded, with a bond value to be reviewed every few years. That's what has gone wrong in South Ayrshire and Dumfriesshire. And there have also been there has to be regular checks that this is being undertaken. Conditions 4 and 5 in the report are very sensible. Then I go down to 2.5. Howgate is a real community. Two ancient woodlands will be taken out. An unclassified road across the moor will be removed. I take that road every day. And I know that when the A6094 was closed last year, that road was the relief road that everybody used. The environmental scope was actually done by Scottish Coal. Look what happened to them. And I feel it has not been revisited by Hargreaves. There is no presumption in favor of permission. Development is contrary to the development plan, so the presumption is against permission, unless material consideration indicate otherwise. 5.6 is essential. It's very important. May you look at 5.24, and we need to examine this in detail. The A6094 will be ruined, and the road across the moor disappears. There are 293 local objections, and then 8.59. This is so important. The coal is said to be going to Longannet or somewhere else. We need to know where. I feel that we need to look urgently for expert advice for this council. My interest is in the people of Midlothian who are going to be exposed to lorries, lorries, and lorries. Can I recommend to appoint an independent consultant to Midlothian Council to advise us on the largest investment made in our council's history? It's much larger than the Waverley line, if you take what part of the Waverley line is going through Midlothian. He or she should review the operations prior to us giving planning permission. The mine plan has to be reviewed. If accepted, the site will generate employment, but it would be reasonable to have the mine plan reviewed to ensure employment is maintained, to evaluate if the bond is fit for purpose, to review the market plan. Once planning is granted, he or she should review ongoing operations from a technical point of view. We need to know how much coal will be stocked on site. Where will the coal be finally loaded out to the market? This is a £480 million project, and we cannot be cavalier about this. As the local authority, we have a serious responsibility on our shoulders. Our planners do not, and with great respect to them, have the in-depth knowledge required to evaluate such a huge project. And this is nothing for them to be ashamed of. Midlothian also needs to carry out a mineral evaluation plan to value all minerals in our controlling area. This will ensure all information is available when other application is made, and this could be done by that same person. So can I summarize? In Scotland, we desperately need coal. If we do not have coal in the current energy mix, the price of electricity would increase to an unacceptable high level and industry would shut down. Coal keeps the lights on. The general public need to be aware of this. Unless we burn coal, we will have a huge increase in electricity prices. Coal is a commodity, and a commodity are based on need, which drives supply, demand, quality, and price. The market price for coal in the northwest of Europe is the average price index too. This market price is based on coal having a standard quality with two key fundamentals. Net calorific value, 25.12 gigajoules, and sulfur 0.8. Supply, current oversupply from the US, which is holding prices down, which has troughed at a higher level than any other historical low point. Demand, the UK has 60 million tons of coal demand, but we only produce 50 million tons, so we need to import. And the imports are on the whole 25.12 gigajoules and 1% sulfur. So coal haul being only 21 net gigajoules and 1.5 sulfur will be the result that this price is going to be much lower than it would otherwise be. It would be logical to say that coal haul's coal would need to be discounted significantly to the market price and or blended with import to raise the calorific value and lower the sulfur. Now, this is very technical, but in Longannet, we have a non-fuel gas desulfonization unit, and that burns the bulk of the coal there, and it is all Russian coal, which is having a 25.12 gigajoule value, calorific value, and only 0.3 sulfur. And the other remaining units cannot burn sulfur that is more than 1%. We know from sources, other sources, that there is going to be a new power station built in place of Longannet in, this is not in my note, incidentally, in Grangemouth, that is specially built to take Scottish coal. Now, the Coulthall coal could go there, but it also could be sold to Drax, which can accept low calorific value, high sulfur coal. Drax is in Yorkshire. How is our coal going to get there? What fees does the operator pay to Midlothian? I have gone to some trouble to consult with people who know something about this essential industry. Inevitably, coal is a bad neighbour, and as a council, we have to keep a close eye on our constituents' interests. I am not satisfied that these interests are fully enough protected in this case, and I strongly believe that there is much more which needs to be done before we could consent this application. Therefore, I urge you to continue the application, to commission and instruct expert advice, to appoint a small subcommittee to deal with the flow of information, and to reconsider the matter in our meeting in March, or as may otherwise be convenient to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I shall try and address as much of that as I can. If I start, first of all, with the issues in general relating to the market. As Councillor has said, there is a demand and a need for coal. We currently have an energy dependency upon it. We're not in a position at the moment to stop coal one day and go to renewables the next. That's a transition we have to go through. So there is a need for coal, and the market shows that. In terms of the extraction from the site, you're obviously then into market forces, as the council says. Obviously, the operator will only extract it if there's a market for it, and they can sell it. That's just the way the world works. In terms of assessing the plan and application, the original submission makes reference to the coal going to Longannet. Now, there is an issue about the sulfur content and the quality of the coal. However, it is common practice in the coal industry to blend coal. There's facilities at both Longannet and at Leith ports to enable blending to take place. The Longannet station needs coal with a sulfur content of 1% or less. The average content of sulfur from the site is 1.5. Therefore, some coal can be used directly at Longannet. Some other coal will have to be mixed with other sources. And as the council has said, the majority of the coal that feeds Longannet at the moment comes from either Russia, South America, South Africa. So it will be mixed effectively, so it can be used. However, saying all that, I need to sort of put that to one side, because obviously the issue about the market is actually for the applicant. We're looking at land use planning considerations, which obviously include the haulage route. But we're not in a position to restrict the applicant. They can only sell the coal to one customer, but not another. So it is worth bearing in mind. So although the intention is to take it to Longannet, and that's what we've been discussing and looking at, we can't restrict them to that one market. In terms of the issues raised in relation to the planning policy position, that's covered in the report and hopefully covered it in the introduction, in terms of we recognise that the area search in the 2008 local plan only covers the most southern part of the site. However, the sort of national government guidance is telling us there is a need for coal, and obviously it's not like another sort of land use which you can find an alternative site for. If this is where the coal is, we need to make a judgment about whether we're prepared to accept its extraction or not. And an assessment in terms of a planning application looks at the environmental detail in more detail than any other process. So it is reasonable to use a planning application to evaluate that. In terms of the expertise and the monitoring, I mean, one of the recommendations does refer to a technical working group to have that expertise look at the monitoring and restoration. In terms of expertise at assessing the planning application, We've had the plan application since February. We've consulted all the specialists, which is covered in the report. Anyone who wants to make comment could have made comment. We've had all the information and we've come to you with a recommendation to the best of my abilities. And I think that recommendation stands up. I'm not 100% sure how that could be changed by bringing more people into the process. Picking up the issue about the roads, there are conditions in terms of cleaning vehicles as they leave the site. There's also conditions about cleaning the road. And furthermore, there's a Section 75 requirement for a contribution towards the maintenance and repair of the local road infrastructure. So hopefully that issue is covered if the council is minded to grant permission. I think that's covered it, Chair.
Sorry, could I just deal with one or two of the points? I happen to know, or I was informed, that Longannet has hardly any blending possibility. It's very restricted, and that is why it's going to be much more difficult than you imagine, or that we have let to be believed to be imagined. Now, Hargreaves, in their annual report, have stated that they are only interested in sites that can be dealt with in 3 years. And why are they suddenly taking on something that is 10 years? Have we filmed the roads all the way from the point where the coal is being taken off site before we go and it leaves our particular road system? We need to film all these roads. In my opinion, it would be much better if we had a conveyor belt to Hope Field, where there is the first roundabout, which has got at the moment some extraction of sand and gravel, and we could have it from there rather than go and repair that A6094 and try and straighten it and having it with that big dip. You would avoid the whole of Rosewell, and it would be an infinitely better situation. All these things need to be looked at. We are trying to decide on an issue that is £480 million. It is a huge, huge thing, and we are doing it in a cavalier way. I just don't like it. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Peter did highlight, we do need to focus on the planning issues of this, and the market for the any coal extracted is not a planning consideration. It is of great interest, but it isn't a planning consideration, and we do need to bear that in mind.
Chair, if I just pick up on a number of those issues. In terms of the roads, some of the sites in the district, we've looked at a situation where through the, as the roads authority, you've tried to attribute the damage in the highway to a particular vehicle, but that's almost impossible to say that that lorry or that road or that vehicle has caused that pothole. So the alternative approach is to get a contribution into the council so that can be used to maintain and repair roads. I think that's the right approach to take rather than trying to attribute individual bits of damage to individual vehicles. There is a blending pad at Longannet. It was previously used by Scottish Coal. It is there and it can be used by this applicant. And I would just, Chairman, I would just reinforce that we have consulted widely. Again, this has been properly looked at. We have assessed it thoroughly in terms of reaching the recommendation.
Thank you, Chair. There are a number of issues concerning this application which give me cause for concern. Perhaps the most worrying is the cavalier acceptance by officers that we can ignore the local development plan currently in force and override the democratic process by which the next local plan is to be adopted. Let's be clear, this application is contrary to the local plan currently in force. And as we can't be sure what may come along in the future, rejection should have been recommended on that basis alone. The Midlothian Economic Development Framework identifies 7 key economic sectors to support a target of 10,000 new jobs by 2020. Mining is not one of them. We cannot allow our policies in relation to local planning and economic development to be drawn up on the hoof. The arguments put forward for the application itself, I feel, are also questionable. Paragraph 8.63 claims that 230 jobs will be created in Midlothian. This does not square with experience in other open cast mines in Scotland. And the airfield proposal, rejected unanimously by this committee in 2010, expected to provide only 50 jobs on a site producing half as much coal as a cold haul, at a time when economics for coal were much healthier. There may be a track record of apprenticeships in the industry, but that was before Scottish Coal went into administration. There are now several hundred skilled and experienced people, principally in Lanarkshire and Ayrshire, with the incentive to commute to jobs at Cold Hall. I also question how much indirect employment will be created when Scottish Coal leased nearly all its equipment from a wholly owned subsidiary company. Marketability does have a bearing on this application in one respect. The applicant is unclear where the market is for Cold Hall coal. Much of it has a high sulphur content, as we've heard, the highest in Scotland. Even when blended with low sulphur coal from the site, large amounts of imported low sulphur coal may still be required, and transportation to power stations in England has not been ruled out, and no impact assessment has been made on these routes, and that is contrary to policy MIN1 of the local plan. I'm concerned about the environmental impact. 20% of the site is in a designated area of great landscape value, highly visible from the Pentlands, the Morfords, and other viewpoints across the county. 1.5 hectares of ancient woodland will be destroyed. Paragraph 869 acknowledges that the proposed restoration will, quote, alter the landscape to a potentially detrimental effect, unquote. Scottish Natural Heritage states there could be a long-term and significant negative impact upon the local landscape character. As I mentioned earlier, traffic levels along the proposed route will rise markedly, and levels at the Mayshade roundabout on the A7, they are already causing concern, without an additional extra lorry every 3 minutes. On-site restoration, paragraph 837 is worrying that, quote, the planning authority would wish to assure itself that the restoration is the best that is achievable, unquote, is hardly a bold statement. What is meant by achievable? And what confidence can we have in a company with a track record of complying with only its minimal obligations with respect to restoration on sites it has acquired from Scottish Coal and ATH? Assurances were made by Scottish Coal, and councils thought restoration bonds were secure. But as we know, all legal contracts have loopholes, and I have no doubt that once planning permission is granted, those loopholes will be exploited. And finally, we cannot ignore the elephant in the room, climate change. Last week, the most powerful hurricane ever to make landfall hit the Philippines. Only yesterday, Cristiana Figueres, Executive Secretary of the UN Framework on Climate Change, said, quote, most of the existing coal reserves should be left in the ground. Scotland has one of the most demanding CO2 reduction targets in the world. In 2007, this council signed up to the Climate Change Declaration. Are we going to walk away from our responsibilities and legal duties under the Climate Change Act? Coal extraction alone would increase significant amounts of CO2 and methane into the atmosphere, and coal tar would become the biggest source of greenhouse gas emissions in Midlothian. In summary, therefore, I believe the risks involved in approving this application are too great to our communities, to our landscape, to our economy, and not least tourism, and to both the finances and reputation of Midlothian Council. I urge committee to reject this application.
Chair, obviously many of the points that raised by the Council there have already been, Peter Arnsdorf has spoken on that, and also there's information in the report that's before you. The only comment I would just wish to make, and it's just to remind you and advise you as a planning committee, is on relation to the development plan. Section 25 of the Act is very clear in saying that decisions should be made in accordance with the development plan unless there are other material considerations which outweigh that. The report you have before you identifies the position in relation to the development plan and identifies what the position is in relation to the adopted local plan. However, the report also quite reasonably looks at all of the issues in relation to material considerations, and you'll see the recommendation on the basis of the balance of that. Therefore, in your consideration
It's just to identify that that is the balance of factors that you need to consider in coming to your conclusion on the application.
Chair, I'm speaking on recommendation of the report and move the recommendation of the report. I agree with Councillor De Vinck that if we didn't use coal, then I'm quite sure the lights would go. But on the question of the sulphur, it's always been the case, and I've 35 years employed in the coal industry. Blending always took place, not just at Long Arran, but also took place at Kirkenzie Power Station. And I believe it's the case it takes place at power stations. Hargreaves is a new company in Scotland. I've never dealt with Hargreaves before because it was always Scottish Coal that worked Opencast and indeed took out a deep mine at Long Arran when it was privatised in 1995. But my research that I've done, Hargreaves is now probably one of the biggest coal producers in the UK, as well as opencast sites in England. They also manage the cooperative Tower Colliery down in Wales, which was opened by the workers many years ago. They worked the deep mine out, but Hargreaves is managing it. Hartfield deep mine in Yorkshire is being managed by Hargreaves. So, and they are now taking over the role of certain of the opencast sites in Ayrshire and Lanarkshire. And when you look at the need for coal extraction, and the planners have done their homework on this, the increase in coal use in the UK is going up. It is not going down. And if you take it out of the last 2012, 44.8 million tonnes was imported into this country, and 16.8 million was mined. And we're sitting with thousands of people, unemployment, who could be producing the coal for the benefit of the nation. And therefore, I support the recommendation that we grant planning permission for this project. And if it comes to the markets, I'm quite sure Hargreaves have done their work where they're going to sell the coal. And it seemed to me the feasible bit, and it is Long Arran, and there is, as Councillor De Vinck says, a possibility that there'll be a carbon capture power station built at Grangemouth. As far as I'm aware, that's still on the cards also.
Okay, thanks, colleagues. I think we've had a good going round the issues on this, unless there's any other burning issues on this. I'm personally certainly minded to agree with Councillor Bennett. I think that the planners in this have done a very good job, and the recommendations in the report are sound on balance. I think we have clearly a very difficult decision to make here, but one that I think overall the recommendation in this report is right. I think the fact that the vast majority of the statutory consultees have raised no objection to this report, including SEPA, gives me great comfort. And the conditions we are looking to apply, the outline conditions that are already there and the additional conditions that it's proposed we develop, I think can cover the points that have been raised in the main by members. Now, we cannot regulate the market. We cannot regulate where any extracted coal will go to. That is beyond the remit of this committee. But what we can do is regulate the development within our county and the transport of any extracted coal along the roads that we have a locus on. One thing that did strike me is we have heard some discussion about the transport of coal, and certainly for me, I would rather have coal extracted locally than being brought in from Russia or South America, because you do get into issues of the stability and security of supply in that situation. And I think I've certainly had enough reassurance on the report in front of us to back the proposal by Councillor Bennett. I'm certainly minded to listen to other colleagues' views. I've got Councillor Councillor Bryant and then Councillor Baxter.
I would like some comfort in knowing that Midlothian workers were going to be employed before I agree to this. I also would like to know exactly how the restoration is going to be done. If it's going to be a bond, I'd like to know the details of that.
just on the employment, that's not a planning consideration. We cannot use that as a basis of a decision.
Yes, that's right, Chair. It's not a consideration, although what I would say is that my understanding is there is opportunity and on the part of the applicants an indication that they would be willing to commit to work with Edinburgh College in relation to the potential for apprenticeships in relation to, to their activities. Now, as Peter Armstrong said, there's no certainties in relation to the proportion of workers on the site who would be resident or naturally resident within Midlothian, but I probably can't add to the comments that Peter made earlier. In relation to the issue of security of restoration, then it is really a question of what is the most appropriate method to use. I think there's probably a general agreement that the bond option is one which is to some extent discredited, if not wholly discredited, but there are other opportunities, bank guarantees or the escrow account as was talked about, and also the nature of the way in which the site, if you gave approval, would be developed on an incremental basis would mean that the security issue is essentially not so much the method, but a method which is going to give a complete guarantee that at any particular point, if it was necessary, if there was a failure, then the council could take the money from the necessary account which has been put there and to use that to complete whatever restoration is needed on that part of the site was still exposed.
Thank you. I am at a loss that we are not willing to engage with what I would call real world experts on this whole issue, because I cannot believe that we are making the right decision if we are just letting it go as it stands. And all what I am asking for is that we postpone the decision and consult people that really have much more ideas of all of this than we possibly could have within Midlothian. And I would be really disappointed if that somehow would be ignored.
Thank you, Chair. Before we go on to make a decision, I would like to consider the conditions for approval, if we're so minded as a committee to approve the application. Colleagues will have received from the Stop Cold Hall Opencast suggested additions to the conditions, and in a response to that, the Hargreaves have indicated that that they are willing to consider them, at least they're asking to be consulted on the final wording. I would like us to consider the inclusion of the four additional suggested conditions, principally those items 2 and 3, which I think would be really important to allay many of our fears over regulation of the operation of the mine.
Just to say, I think that certainly can be picked up under recommendation 5 within the report, to subject to finalisation of conditions. Okay, we essentially have a number of positions. Councillor De Vink has moved for a continuation to gather further information. Councillor Baxter moved
I'm
refusal. Councillor Bennett has moved approval. I have seconded Councillor Bennett. Do we have a seconder for Councillor Baxter's proposal to reject? Okay, Councillor Beattie. And for Councillor De Vink's proposal to continue? Okay. Unless there's any other pressing comments, if I could take the proposal to continue by...
Point of order. How does this work? If Councillor De Vink's proposal is agreed by majority,
everything else falls.
Mm-hmm. But it means then that somebody who perhaps wanted one of the other options, which would have been carried by a majority vote, will not have that opportunity then.
What I intend to do is take a single vote on the proposal to continue or not to continue, and then we will have a vote either to accept the recommendations in the report or for a refusal. Okay. Okay. Those in favour of continuing this report as proposed by Councillor Devinck? Those not to continue but to determine it now? Thank you. That proposal falls, although I know that consideration has been given, Councillor Devinck. That then takes us to a decision. We have a proposal from Councillor Bennett to approve the recommendations in the report, and an amendment from Councillor Baxter, seconded by Councillor Beattie, to reject the proposal in the report. So could I ask for those, a show for the amendment, which is to reject the recommendation in the report? And those in favour of the motion. On that basis, the proposal to agree the recommendations in the report to grant planning permission subject to conditions is approved. Thank you for your attendance.